I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors for this presentation, Dr. Mark Edgar for the Illinois Public Health Institute and the University of Illinois at Springfield, and Mary Thompson for the Michigan Public Health Institute. The title of my presentation looks very intimidating and complex, but in essence what we're going to talk about in the next 15 or 20 minutes is standards for public health preparedness, performance measures to monitor those standards, and assessment tools to collect the information around those performance measures. So what I want to do is to discuss the difficulty in identifying preparedness standards and indicators, and then I will describe one project that compared different states' preparedness assessments, and finally I will spend the last 5 minutes or so trying to put public health preparedness in the context of today's environment full of competing needs and diversity. I don't think I have to explain to this audience why it is important to measure public health preparedness. Congress have invested over $7 billion in the last 5 years, and most of this money went to the states, and of course they want to know what we did with the money. I think it's a legitimate request, but beyond that, I would argue that as good program managers, if I were the head of the preparedness program in my state, I would definitely want to know what results my money and my activities are achieving. So I think it goes beyond just the request for accountability that comes down from Congress. There are some problems, though. There are some barriers and some challenges. The first one, and perhaps in my mind the most important and significant, is that today, after so many years, we still don't have a consensus of what is ideal preparedness. The question keeps being asked, how prepared are we? And I think the real question should be, how prepared should we be? And so without a clear understanding of what the goals are, it's hard to understand if we are on the right path. So not surprising there are no measurable indicators of preparedness because we don't know what the ideal preparedness is. Now, granted, some individual projects have developed their own programmatic objectives, but even then, those objectives are often set up in such a way that they are not easily measurable. And in addition, there is no universally accepted standardized assessment tool. Now, in 2002, the CDC developed what they called a rapid self-assessment for public health preparedness. Now, the word rapid, I guess it's a little bit a matter of opinion, since that instrument had over 70 questions and 700 specific items. But nevertheless, what was known, what's become known as the capacity inventory, the CDC's capacity inventory, became very widespread, and there were at least, at some point, at least 22 states and over 800 local health departments that use that tool, and some of them are still using it today. So the study that we did in three states of Illinois, Michigan, and Kansas tried to address the following questions. Number one, how comparable are assessments that are done by states independently with independent programs and with no prior shared methodology? And I will explain in a moment what that means. Number two, how helpful is a scoring system if we do these assessments? And number three, if we use a scoring system, how important is it which scoring system we pick out of many that may be available to us? And before I forget, I would like to mention that there are some copies of a full report on this study. We spent just a few minutes on the study, but there are some copies of a full report outside of the room where you're living. As I said, we have three states, Illinois, Kansas, and Michigan. And these states perform their local assessments using the CDC's capacity instrument before the project started. So they did it all independently. At that time, we didn't even know we were going to do this project, between 2003 and 2004. What we did in the project was to analyze all these local assessments together, and we decided to do that using two different algorithms. Now, the two algorithms had different assumptions, so they really were different in concept, but they had one thing in common, and that was that they both produce preparedness indexes. So they produce a number, a preparedness score. And I don't want you to be intimidated by this table. Those numbers don't need to mean very much to you, but I just wanted to give you a sense of what the output of the project was. You have three states, state number 1, 2, and 3, 5 focus areas that we were able to measure, and for each state and focus area, we use two different scoring systems, the Illinois, what we refer to as the Illinois scoring system, and the Kansas scoring system. And those numbers there are the scores, and the range was 1 to 100. Now, this chart hopefully makes a little bit more sense. This refers only to one of the states, which we will call state 1, and you see the 5 focus areas there at the bottom on the x-axis, And you see two bars. The green one is the Illinois scoring system, and the blue one is the Kansas scoring system. Now, there are a couple of things that I would like to point out here. First of all, the absolute numbers for each focus areas of the two scoring systems are different. But that's not surprising. As I said, they have different assumptions, different methodologies, so I'm not surprised that the absolute numbers are different. But the second element I would like to point out is that they are actually showing the same trends. For example, both scoring systems show the focus area C, which was a laboratory capacity, is the one with the lowest score in state 1. And focus areas A and G are the ones with the highest scores. So the trends are similar, the absolute numbers are different, but that shouldn't bother us. Another thing that we did was pulling all the data from the three states and do some analysis that otherwise we would not have been able to do. For example, this analysis looked at the preparedness indexes by population density of the counties. And you can see that there is a very nice and smooth increase when you move from frontier to rural and then into semi-urban and urban. Pretty nice linear increase. Now again, the absolute numbers are different for the two scoring systems, but the trends are absolutely identical, I would say. And this analysis was only possible because we had data from the three states. We would not have been able to do it with one state only. Why? Because none of the three states had enough counties in each of the five groups to allow for an analysis like this. So here are the answers that we found in our little study. First of all, despite differences in methods, the data had an acceptable level of consistency and reliability. Data were collected independently before the study even started using a common assessment tool. That was the only thing in common. And yet we were able to get something valuable out of it. Second, using a scoring system allowed us a couple of things. First of all, it allows us to do comparisons across jurisdictions. This is extremely important, not only because we always want to know how we are doing in relation to someone else, but also because, remember I said there are no national standards. In the absence of national standards, the next best thing is probably start doing some benchmarking. We don't know what ideally the scoring should be for focus area B, let's say. But let's look at what all the scores of focus area B are around the different states, and probably we can learn some valuable lessons there and decide what an acceptable benchmark could be to begin with. The other thing that we were able to do, as I mentioned, is to pull the data and identify trends that were not recognizable otherwise in one jurisdiction only. And finally, as I indicated, that whatever scoring system we pick really didn't make a big difference. Yes, sure, the absolute numbers did, but the trends, the comparisons, it was the same thing. So perhaps the single most important lesson that we learned from the study was that using the best available tools today is probably going to be more helpful than waiting until we have the perfect tool we don't know when. So why is it not so easy? Well, one thing to keep in mind is that public health preparedness and bioterrorism are really new concepts, relatively new concepts, so it's really hard. There is no evidence there to guide us in deciding what's an ideal level of public health preparedness. And it's hard to come up with that evidence when the best outcome of good public health preparedness is when nothing happens. But there are some additional factors, and I will mention only one, which is the fragmentation of the system. I don't think I have to explain to you the differences between the federal, the state, or local public health government, but each of the three levels, of course, have their own interventions, their own activities, their own level of funding, and that is not a hierarchy. So how you integrate all these different things into one meaningful system becomes a challenge. But there is also another level of fragmentation that I want to point out. In 2005, we looked at the CDC-funded bioterrorism preparedness program in the Kansas Department of Health and Environment, and we found that there were 500 discrete activities in that program, 500, that the program was required to track and to report to the CDC. Now, when you have 500 trees that you have to monitor individually, it's really hard to look at the forest. And people were incredibly busy doing 500, literally 500 different things, but it's hard then to think big, to think about the meaning and the purpose of what you're doing. So this level of fragmentation, I think, has not helped our movement towards a more standardized program. Nevertheless, it can be done. We can do assessments. We can do monitoring of this kind of performance management. And we did it in Kansas, actually, and it helped. We did it twice. We did that kind of assessment with the FIPO tool twice. The first year was what we call the baseline at the inception of the program, the preparedness program, and then 1 year later, we redid it. And despite the complexity, the 700 items, 70 questions, we were able to reduce our findings to three. Number one, over a period of 1 year, capacity improved on average 27%. Isn't that a powerful message? 27% improvement in 1 year. Number two, there is still substantial room for improvement. Even after 1 year, our average capacity score on a scale 1 to 100 was 43. Still a lot of space for improvement. Number three, there is wide variability in preparedness by counties, regions, and critical capacity areas. And the ratio between the county that had the highest score and the one that had the lowest score was 4 to 1. And there were also different levels of preparedness in rural and urban areas. Now, everybody can understand this. If my governor comes to me and says, "Doctor, how prepared are we? I don't have to fumble. So, you know, look at the CDC focus area, C, critical capacity 1, then you... I've lost her already." Our governor is a woman. This message was well understood, and we got very good media coverage, and it was very balanced. They looked at the glass that was half full, they looked at the glass that was half empty. So they advocated for increased investment and sustained efforts, but they also acknowledged the results achieved. So it can be done. There are two more reasons I want to mention why I also think it's important for us as a nation to decide what standard we want to follow for public health preparedness. We have a dilemma. We have a resource dilemma today. We must decide what level of risk is acceptable, what level of risk we are willing to take. And we haven't done that yet. If you think about that, we are now, what, 4, 5, 6 years into public health preparedness activities, and we still don't fully agree about how prepared we must be. And without those clear standards and indicators, we don't know our final destination. We could be traveling forever. What that means, we could be putting money and billions of dollars forever into this program without seeing the end for it. And the problem with that is that there are already people, and I'm sure you are aware of that, that are saying, this is a quote from a published article in 2004, bioterrorism preparedness programs have been a disaster for public health, because of their unnecessary harmful consequences, primarily the diversion of resources. These billions of dollars invested in preparedness, of course, are dollars that are not going to other public health programs. And what that means is, if you look at this table, this is a summary of two landmark studies that were published in 1993 and then appeared in 2004. The real causes of deaths in the United States, 50% of them are behavioral choices, smoking, lifestyles, obesity, physical inactivity, alcohol consumption, and so on. When you look at deaths from public health preparedness between 2001 and 2005, so that includes the 9/11 events, that includes the Katrina deaths, they were less than one, they account for less than 1% of all the deaths. Now, each one of those deaths is a tragedy, don't get me wrong. But clearly, when you look at the level of investment, you see that we have 6 to 8% of the estimated budget of public health that goes into preparedness versus less than 1% of deaths. There is a gap there. And I'm not here to advocate in favor or against this approach. I'm not here to say whether there is too much money in preparedness or it's too late. I'm here to say, unless we decide as a society how prepared we want to be and what level of risk we are willing to accept, this debate will not be meaningful. This debate will be based on irrational decisions, and that's not the way we want to allocate billions of dollars. One more element in support of our dire need for standards. If you look at this statement, I ask, do you agree with that? Everyone, no matter where they live, should reasonably expect the local health department to meet certain standards. This is from Nature operational definition of local health departments. I think most reasonable people working in public health would probably agree. But how do we translate that in practice? What does it mean? Does it mean that Neches County, Kansas, population 3,444, two hospitals, mind it, two hospitals in the little county. One is Griselle Memorial with 12 beds and 0.25 FTE physician. Still beats me how they sliced the physician into quarters and kept only one quarter. Does it mean that this county, Neches County, should have the same level of preparedness as Sedgwick County, where the city of Wichita is, where only where about 500,000 people live, and out of 7 hospitals, Wesley has probably more employees than the entire population of Ness County. So what does the statement of principle mean in practice? Where do we want to go? What level of risk is acceptable in Ness County and in Sedgwick County? We just don't know. So I think in terms of next step, we absolutely must develop a policy for a standardized performance assessment. The first goal should be to reach a consensus on national performance standards. Those are the goals. The standards is where we, that's the ideal status. That's where we want to move. And there has been some progress, don't get me wrong. I don't want to disregard the progress through the national operational definition, the accreditation movement, the CDC's target capability list, again, 37 areas, probably a little bit too much, but those are all steps in the right direction. I think we need to move faster, though. After we know where we want to go, we know to decide and settle on a few national performance indicators, few, not 700 questions, not 500 activities. And these indicators must be meaningful, quantifiable, something that people can count, something that people can compare from one state to the next, and something also that can be monitored without too much burden. I don't know you, but people who work in public health in Kansas have been assessed and reassessed and then reassessed again, and frankly, they're getting tired of being assessed. And so I think it's time to really think how we develop a performance management for public health preparedness and public health in general that makes good use of data that are routinely collected through our information systems, as opposed to those mega one-time surveys that require everybody to drop everything they're doing for 3 days and just do the survey. And last but not least, we need to have standardized assessment tools. And I think that the CDC's capacity assessment tool, with all its limitations, and there is a lot of them, was a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, there was no further development, but I would hope that whatever assessment tool we are going to use in the future is going to bridge back to that. And I hope I've shown you with our study the usefulness of using a scoring system. Put numbers there. Numbers are much easier to understand. Numbers are much easier to compare. They may not be the perfect number. It doesn't matter if you move from 40 to 41. That's not the point. The point is, how does your 40 compare to the number in other places and to the numbers that you got last year and where you want to go next year? I would like to acknowledge these people who contributed to this study and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that funded our study. Thank you. Have a couple of minutes for questions if anybody has any questions or comments. Yes, sir.
One clarification and one question. The 37 list of PCLs, that's a DHS document, not a CDC document, first of all. Then the question I have is with the smaller list of indicators, what do you propose those be?
What do I propose? I don't have the list in my pocket. I don't have a list in my pocket, but I think it should be something. I think the step for the indicator should be subsequent to the step about the standards. Once you know what your goals are, then it's going to be easier, I think, to decide what the indicators are going to be to measure those goals. But, you know, the characteristics I showed in the slide before, to me, are the most important ones. Something that should be measurable, meaningful, easy to understand and communicate, and easy to compare with numbers. Any other questions?